Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Pat Dawson, newly retired CEO of the Irish Travel Agents Association. Good afternoon to you in the Cork studio.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
And Pat, it was through you and travel agents like you that most people first got to experience foreign holidays. And you're retiring now after 50 years in the travel game. So I thought we might do a little look back, maybe a bit of social history with you today. And I'm sure people will start texting in now about their first foreign holidays and those early adventures and travel that Irish people started having. Your own introduction to travel came from the J1 visa to America, yeah?
It did, yeah. I went to college in Carlow Regional College, and so I became president of the Students' Union, and I don't know how I got involved in it, but I decided then to talk to USAID at the time and see could I get a sort of an appointment there for set up a J1 visa, which I did. So that's many moons ago, Brendan. So I set up that, and about 25 or 30 students from Carlow Regional College went off to the States, and it was the first day of its kind. So it was fantastic.
So was that just when the J1 was starting? This is when college students can go off and work in America for the summer. And most of them have like incredible life-changing experiences. Was that the start of the whole J1 thing at that stage? Yeah?
The very start of it, yeah. The very start of it. And I suppose, the main reason we went off was to sort of collect up some dollars to put us through the following year in college as such. And most of us really worked hard. I mean, I had a fantastic experience. I went to a gorgeous place, which I'm sure you heard of, Lake Placid in northern New York, where the Winter Olympics. And I became a caddy there for all summer. And I carried two bags for 36 holes a day. And then I served drinks in people's houses at night time. So I went to bed and counted the dollars and got up the next morning and did the same thing again. But it was great.
You're giving a very virtuous view of it all now, Pat. I'd say there was a bit of play as well.
A small bit of play.
So for most people, in a way, pilgrimages were probably the first mass-scale foreign travel in Ireland, weren't they, that people can remember? And your first job was actually bringing people to Lourdes, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I started to work for Joe Walsh Tours at the time, and they were the lead in that, and they used to take 25 or 30,000 pilgrims to Lourdes every year during the summer. It was, Brendan, a fantastic experience. I mean, you know, some people might think of Lourdes as being a very sort of depressing place with a lot of sick people there, which there are. But let me tell you, as I said in an interview recently, there was more crack there than there was in Santa Ponta. and the people were really wonderful. But I mean, you know, you go around to the grotto at the time. God, Brendan, this is probably 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was very sanctimonious and beautiful, and the stillness of it. And what came to my mind, which was lovely, was, you know, the happiness of the people who were sick. I know that's a funny thing to say.
Yeah.
And the young people who were their carers, it was just unbelievable.
And young volunteers would go as helpers, wouldn't they?
Yeah. They would, yeah. And there was sort of a love story between the volunteers and the sick people. And the serenity down there, particularly at night time, you know, no matter whether you're religious or not, it was just a beautiful place. And then at night time, they'd have their dinner, and then they started into the glasses of French wine, which was probably a euro a bottle or a pound or whatever it was at the time, and they'd sing along and have sing songs with the parish priest and maybe the odd bishop.
Yeah, of course. Now, am I right in thinking your mother got you the job sending people to Lourdes? Did your mother tell you she was going on holidays and actually ran away to become a nun?
She did. She did indeed. To the UK. My mother was a school teacher.
Yeah.
And she went to. She told us she was going on. There were seven of us, and still are, thank God. So she told us she was going to England for a couple of weeks' holidays, and that went on along for a few months. And then the next thing we found out that she was in a convent over there for people who were married but lost their partner, and she was trained and become a nun. And she did. She became a reverend mother. And a funny story about the Irish Times and the Examiner. I knew many people in the Examiner. And I told him the story. By the way, my mother is getting, there's a name for it, not beatified, but some name anyway, in Cork. And of course, the Examiner guys thought it was ball hopping. But The following Monday, the Irish Times had the story anyway, and the Examiner guys were going mad, but that's just beside the point.
Did she become a different kind of person then? Like, was she still your mother, and did you kind of have the same relationship with her and everything? Was it weird getting your head around that she's now a Reverend Mother?
Not really, no. She was a school teacher for many, many years as such. No, she never changed. She was a very, very good person, rather, a very, very holy person.
Yeah, and okay.
She ran a convent in the north of Cork, which was for retirees. Now, she was well into her 70s, early 80s, and she ran that convent, and I got my accountant. She needed help with accounts or whatever else to run that. So she took it in her stride. And I suppose the great thing about her is that she woke up every morning with a positive attitude and that. And it was a great honour for us.
Yeah, wow. Anyway, we digress. So back to, there was the pilgrimages. Then getting married in Rome used to be very popular as well. And there had to be a screen involved, I believe, when you organised those trips.
That's right, yeah. There was one hotel, I think it's still there, Brendan, the Fiume Hotel in Rome. And I don't know whether, I'm sure it was the mammy or the daddy insisted that couples would go down, we'll say, on a Thursday and might get married on a Friday. But on the Thursday night, there was distinct instructions that there was a screen to be put in the bedroom between the bride and groom to be. And if that didn't happen, I think it was the mammy would sort of give out fears to the travel agent or the tour operator that the screen wasn't there. But of course, after the marriage...
They wouldn't stretch the separate bedrooms. You just get the screen up.
Yeah, and when they got married, then life changed a good bit as such. But that did go on, and it's not one bit exaggerated.
Innocent times.
Yeah, innocent times as such. But, I mean, it was very, very unique. And, I mean, there was a big charter business out of Ireland. It was a million charter seats. That landscape has all changed now with low cost and stuff like that.
Come here, just on the screen thing. Did you also have to be married to book a holiday together in the early days?
Yeah, in some travel agencies, let me say, probably outside of Dublin,
okay,
if I can say that. There were travel agencies I know who turned down business because the couples were not married. That's 100% true.
So when did the Sun packages start then, and where did people go?
Well, it was sort of the main player was who I was working with joined the JWT set, and they were the first
ads,
to do it, and
that
was, and the ads came along, and I mean, I ended up being involved as a contracts manager as well for Joe moving up along, and I looked after the Palmy area, which was the biggest area, and of course, Santa Ponsa then was where every young person went, and today they still go, but the island now has developed and everything else. So from that point of view, that was the first place.
I believe you were the person who kind of staked the claim for the Irish in Santa Ponsa, were you?
I was, yeah, because we decided in Joe Walsh Tours the number of beds or apartments, and we would have had hundreds and hundreds of apartments contracted, and our competitors then followed along. But yeah, we did Joe Walsh Tours now, not me myself, but I was the contracts manager and signed contracts down there, and that was the start of the exodus out to Mallorca and Palma, and to this day, you know, thousands and thousands of Irish still go there.
Mm. How much was a week in the Sun back then?
Oh, I think it was £59 for a week in the Sun, including the flight. It was incredibly cheap, and ordinary people like ourselves, they could afford it and everything else. I mean, I know,
it was still, even when I was, I'd say I grew up in the 70s, 80s, it was still now only certain people went away to Spain and that kind of thing.
There would have been, yeah. But I think the people who went to Spain probably then were people who went to Marbella. Marbella would have been the higher echelons of travelling abroad as such. And that has changed. But certainly that's the way it was. And as I say, I mean, Spain now is by far the biggest country that we still visit in our hundreds and hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. Did the Irish adapt well to the Sun, Sea and Sangria initially? Because it was, it would have been all new to people, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was, yeah. And, of course, we would get phone calls from abroad saying that so-and-so guy or girl of 19 or 20 is now in hospital with stroke or sunburn and that, and so we'd have to get a rep to go around to the hospital. So that happened, all that. So between the Sun and the Sangria, whatever it was, certainly people ended up that way, but not too many, thank God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we kind of got used to it eventually. It's still the odd incident. Air travel was still kind of glamorous back then, Pat, was it? Like, people used to dress up to go on the plane, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Yeah, they did. And it was a different aspect. And certainly, yeah, and it was posh. And I mean, it was more regulated and sort of you knew what seats were going on and there was more care and attention. But certainly, yeah, it was. And then you were transferred, you were picked up at the airport, brought away, you were staying, and you were minded. And the rep you would call, he or she would call maybe two or three times a week to make sure you're okay. So there was that sort of service went on. Nowadays, that doesn't happen. It's a cost thing or whatever else.
Well, depending on who you travel with.
Exactly.
So come here, when then did we start to see the New York shopping trips and that kind of travel?
I would say about 20, 25 years ago, we started to go there for two or three days. And we ended up like it was probably cheaper to go to New York and buy New York, and the dollar was great at the time, but that's the way it was. It was indeed.
And then when did skiing become a thing? Because really that would not have been it's commonplace now, like, but nobody went skiing when I was a kid.
No, I mean, that was really, really the thing to do. And I suppose a lot of schools where I used to go skiing, and they still do. But certainly, you know, I remember there might have been only two or three flights a week going skiing, but now there's 8, 10 or 15 and to different resorts, and that has expanded. But certainly skiing was certainly, you know, it was an expensive, the gear was expensive, lessons were expensive, but certainly it has expanded. And it's still pricey as I speak, but certainly it has expanded, that market has expanded. And we'll say ordinary people go there now. But it's a very much repeat thing. As such, and you learn it in secondary schools. I mean, secondary schools have to gather 700 or 800 ahead at least to go, and that. But they book 70 or 80 seats, charter them or whatever else, and they go, and that's a big occurrence, particularly out of the cities Limerick, Cork, and Dublin.
Yeah. You went out on your own then after Joe Walsh, didn't you? And you would have been known for sports travel then, which I'd say it was a hairy enough business in the early days, wasn't it, managing all that kind of
thing? Yeah, it was, yeah. And, you know, it was. And through a colleague of yours, I got introduced, Michael Corcoran, the great rugby commentator, I got introduced to the administration manager of Man United. He happened to be in Cork, and I met him. And we had a chat, a drink, a pint, whatever we had, and we signed a contract with Man United. And at that time, we're the only ones with the contract as such. That has changed, but I mean, it was amazing. I mean, we carried over 1,000 to Barcelona to the Cup Final, the European Cup Final back in then. And I mean, I remember like there was 15,000 or 18,000 people at 3 o'clock in the morning after the match. Thank God United won, and waiting for aircraft to come in. But the sports thing, Brendan, is a peculiar thing, because I remember, and of course we still do carry the great days of Munster, and hopefully they'll win today. I love saying that, but you'd wait on a Ron O'Gara might have a penalty in the last 5 minutes, if he got it, then he got through to the final or the semi-final. So we had a lot of money riding on it, on a kick like that. So a lot of long way excited about who goes to win.
Yeah.
But the financial windfall was there, and it has its ups and downs. I mean, I can tell you a story. I mean, that I brought a charter to Seville. Ireland were playing in Seville against Spain, and we went there 3 days out, 160, 170 people. And I'd spoken to the FAI for tickets, and they said, no problem, look, we'll have tickets in Seville, meet us the day before. Anyway, I heard in the news then that the FAI had a row. This is a factual story, otherwise I wouldn't tell it. Had a row with the Spanish FAI, call it. And they reduced the volume of tickets. Right. So I rang up my contact. No, we've no tickets. This is 2 days to go. And then I got the name of the president of Seville FC. I had to collect 3,000 or 4,000 cash from friends and foes around Spain who travelled out. And I remember, I mean, I've told this story a few times, and friends of mine would know it. I went into an empty stadium the day before with this money. This guy with a leather coat came out from behind a wall.
Del boy.
yeah. And he was an official. And I handed him over the money. He had sort of pidgin English. Seville, there's not great English speakers there. So for about 5 minutes, I had no tickets nor no money. And the next thing, he came out with the tickets. But these things can happen in that game. And, you know, you win some and you lose some. But yeah, you can have bad experiences and good experience. So it's a tricky game, sports travel as such. And your charter and aircraft, which is, you really need to know and trust who you're talking to and speaking to. That's
you
for sure.
You have nerves of steel, I imagine. Yeah,
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
Come here, will you travel in retirement now, or would that be like a busman's holiday for you?
I will travel, yeah, I will. We have we have family in Orlando, in Florida, and we'll go there every year, every other year. And certainly, look, I'm biased in the sense the Iberian Peninsula, and I'd be going to the Portugal and Spain mainly, because, believe it or not, Brendan, I'm not a great flyer, and I have to say that.
Right.
I'm a nervous flyer, so to me, 2.5 to 3 hours is a long, except for my family to Orlando, which is 9 hours. But, you know, I'm glad to be up, glad to get down, and glad to be term firm. So from that point of view, yes, I will. And go off season and get a bit of a nice weather. And I like my Rioja, and I like the Spanish and Portuguese food and that. So yes, I will do, but not too much, because I've enough to do now. I've finished 2 weeks now, but it's the busiest 2 weeks I ever had. So
I can imagine.
I'll have plenty to do.
Before you go, Pat, is there any secret destinations that you know that you've never told people about?
Well, there's a couple. I mean, probably some people would know them, but there's a resort called Huelva in Cadiz, which is in Andalusia. It's an hour from Seville, and that's a really, really gorgeous place, far from the maddening crowd. And you have Alvoradén, which is Alentejo in Portugal, which is an hour from Lisbon. Lovely places. Two coffees and a bone or two, €4.50 or whatever else. A bottle of beer, 75 cents, and it's really, really de Spain and de Portugal, and certainly those two places are lovely.
Okay, listen, Pat Dawson, thanks a million, and bon voyage with everything ahead. Lawrence here travelled JWT to Arenal, is it, in Mallorca, July 1966, flew from Belfast, £47. Tom and Rat Farnham, remember when you could smoke on Aer Lingus planes? Remember, it was insane. They provided a full cooked Irish breakfast and later a drop of whiskey gratis if required. But being the sole airline in Ireland, prices went sky high. Sorry for the pun, yes. First holiday with friends, 1988, Santa Ponsa, €435 for 2 weeks. Yeah, day apartments, basic, but best holiday ever card. I think we all had the best holiday ever in really basic apartments in places like Santa Ponsa. Pat was very forward thinking, has been a wonderful representative for us. Congratulations on your retirement. That's Mary, so I presume she's a travel agent. Pat Dawson, thanks a million. We'll take a break.